This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Welcome to the Pro Football Time Machine. This is your host, Tom Pollen, along with Zozo the Cat. Before we start our journey, please take a moment to click on the subscribe button so you're ready to join Zozo and I each time we make a trip into the past. Now, join us as we slip from the present day through the time portal and begin our journey. Today, the Pro Football Time Machine will be celebrating the career of one of the greatest team builders in NFL history. Jim Finks could have spent his life as the answer to this trivia question. Who beat out Hall of Famer Johnny Unitas as starting quarterback of the 1955 Pittsburgh Steelers? Finks finished that 1955 season by leading the NFL in pass attempts, completions, passing yards, and 10 touchdowns. He also threw 26 interceptions, which might have been the last straw for Finks. He retired after that season. Fortunately for the NFL, especially the Minnesota Vikings, Chicago Bears, and New Orleans Saints, the end of Finks' playing days kicked off his Pro Football Hall of Fame career as a builder of winners. In 1957, after spending a season as an assistant coach at Notre Dame, Finks took on the role of player coach for the Calgary Stampeders of the Canadian Football League. He played four games before sustaining an injury that ended his playing career, but allowed the Stampeders to put his football intelligence to better use. Finks became the team's general manager on October 31, 1957. The work Finks did once he was put in charge of the Stampeders did not change the team's fortunes overnight. The short-term fix never interested Finks. As a member of his staff in Chicago once said, "Jim Finks doesn't build teams. He builds organizations. Then the good teams follow naturally." Throughout his career, Finks prioritized the draft when it came to finding young talent. He worked closely with his scouts to evaluate and identify the players he felt he could build with. Finks also considered the offensive and defensive lines to be the core of any winning team. Everything else would rest on that foundation. The work Finks did turned the Calgary Stampeders into the winningest team in the CFL in the 1960s and delivered a Grey Cup title in 1971. In 1964, Jim Finks returned to the NFL as general manager of the Minnesota Vikings and proved that everything he learned in Calgary about team building applied equally well in the NFL. Defensive end Jim Marshall was already in place when Finks arrived in Minnesota. His first draft pick with the Vikings was defensive end Carl Eller, and his first trade was to acquire defensive tackle Gary Larson from the Los Angeles Rams. In the 1967 NFL draft, Finks added defensive tackle Alan Page to the group that, from that point forward, became known as the Purple People Eaters. Finks also proved during his years in Minnesota that he could also identify a winning coach. In 1967, when Norm Van Brocklin resigned as the Vikings head coach, Finks reached into the CFL to hire Bud Grant, who would spend 18 years as the tough, shirt-sleeves-wearing figurehead of the team. By 1968, a team that had never made the postseason in its first 7 years of existence won the NFC Central Division. In 1969, that team went to Super Bowl IV to play the Kansas City Chiefs. The team Finks put together in Minnesota would go to the Super Bowl a total of 4 times, but unfortunately in each appearance fell short of winning the Lombardi Trophy. In May of 1974, Finks resigned as general manager of the Vikings due to differences that arose between him and one of the team's group of 5 owners. There was wild speculation around the NFL about what Finks' next move would be. What was unknown at the time was, in 1973, while watching another of the Chicago Bears' dismal losses, George Halas Jr., or Muggs, turned to his father and said, "I am so sick of this." George Halas Sr. had run every aspect of the Bears' operation since the founding of the team as the Decatur Staleys in 1919, but knew he needed to modernize, especially when it came to evaluating players. A series of terrible drafts had the Bears scraping the bottom of the NFL standings in the early 1970s. Halas had kept an eye on what Finks was accomplishing in Minnesota and pounced on the chance to bring him to Chicago. In the most surprising part of the deal by the Bears, Finks was given complete control over football operations, becoming the first person in franchise history outside of former Bears or the Halas family to make decisions for the team. Finks began by thoroughly scouting the Bears players as they completed the 1974 season and scoured NFL rosters to identify players he could bring in. After the team finished their 4-10 season, Finks set to work. He fired head coach Abe Gibron, who had been an internal organization hire, and brought in Jack Pardee. Pardee had played linebacker for the Los Angeles Rams and Washington Redskins from 1957 to 1972 and was considered the equivalent of a coach on the field. Pardee had just finished his first season as a head coach with the Florida Blazers of the World Football League. Finks started rebuilding the team's roster in the 1975 NFL draft, his first with the Bears. The player that he selected 5th overall became as synonymous with Chicago Bears football as Dick Butkus, Gale Sayers, and Bronco Nagurski. That player was running back Walter Payton. There was also a surprise pick later in the draft of a fullback who teamed with Payton in the Bears' backfield for 6 seasons. In the 17th round, yes, drafts in those years went 17 rounds, Finks found Roland Harper out of Louisiana Tech. Payton and Harper teamed to form one of the toughest backfields in the NFL. In 1978, the two nearly became the first backfield to rush for over 1,000 yards each in a season. Payton rushed for 1,395 yards, and Harper ran for 992 yards of his own. In 1977, for the first time since their 1963 championship season, the Bears made the playoffs. Unfortunately, Pardee left the Bears after the season to become head coach of the Washington Redskins. To replace him, Finks turned to Minnesota and hired Neil Armstrong, the Vikings defensive coordinator and a coach Finks had worked with before. Armstrong led the Bears to the playoffs in 1979, but after 2 straight losing seasons in 1980 and 1981, George Halas became impatient and fired him as head coach without consulting Finks. Halas also made the decision to replace Armstrong with Mike Ditka. That was a step too far. Finks believed in clear delineations of power within an organization. He never interfered with how his coaches did their business and expected the same from team owners in how he operated. Once, after Virginia McCaskey had taken over as owner of the Bears after her father's death, Finks had an encounter with her husband, Ed. Ed wanted to know if there was anything he could do to help with the team. Finks replied, "You're an owner, Ed. Own." Despite Halas's interference, Finks stayed with the Bears through the 1983 NFL draft before parting ways. In that draft, the Bears added 7 starters. 2 of those starters, left tackle Jimbo Covert in the first round and defensive end Richard Dent in the 8th round, ended up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. After leaving, everything Finks built came together into what is still considered one of the greatest teams in NFL history, the 1985 Chicago Bears. After leaving the Bears, Finks joined the Chicago Cubs as team president and chief executive officer, but football was his life. On January 14, 1986, he jumped at the chance to take charge of the New Orleans Saints, a team that hadn't finished a season with a winning record since it entered the NFL as an expansion franchise in 1967. This time, the turnaround was amazing to behold. Finks reached into the USFL to hire Jim Mora as the team's head coach, and in their second season at the helm, New Orleans steamrolled through the NFL to an 11-3 record and the first postseason appearance in franchise history. In the 6 seasons that Finks was at the helm of the Saints, they never finished below 500 and made the playoffs 3 more times. Finks kept a note in his wallet his entire life with this saying, "In life, it's the journey, not the arrival that counts. Does the road wind uphill all the way? Yes, to the very end." While with the Saints, the road for Finks began winding to its finish. A chain smoker all his life, Finks was diagnosed with lung cancer on April 30th, 1993, a few days after that year's NFL draft. On July 15th of that year, Finks stepped down as general manager. The rest that he found in stepping back from football and treatments to fight his cancer didn't help, though. Jim Finks died on May 10, 1994. His contributions to the game he loved and the teams he lifted will never be forgotten. Finks was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame on July 29, 1995. The Vikings followed by inducting him into their Ring of Honor on October 18, 1998. Finks would have been grateful for the honors, but they don't define who he was. Jim Finks was a builder of winners. Thank you for traveling today with Zozo and I as we celebrated the life of someone who I admired. First, because of his time and achievements with the Chicago Bears, and second, for the way he lived and presented himself in life. We look forward to having you join us again next time in the Pro Football Time Machine.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history. But as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.